Welcome to Influencer Marketing for Destinations, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network.
Welcome to Influencer Marketing for Destination Podcast. We are so excited that you're here today for another episode. We are on episode 5, and Jacqueline and I are excited to chat with you today about an exciting topic that I think will benefit both the influencer and the destination.
Yes, Jess, we are talking about such an exciting topic today, and I can't believe we're already on episode 5. It seems like we just started yesterday, and we still have so many fun things to talk about, so we'll take it one step at a time.
I agree. Time flies when we're having fun. So let's dive into this. Jacqueline, do you want to kind of tell the audience about this Time Out for Trends segment that we have today?
Yes, I'd love to. And our Time Out for Trends section today really flows nicely with our deep dive of researching and vetting influencers. We have a lot of controversy and opinions about this Time Out for Trends topic as well. Affluencer is a company that specializes in influence and influencer marketing, and one of their articles talked about micro-influencers and how they don't have a big number of following, but they are just on the rise, and people are utilizing them the most because of their niche audience and how they can influence their audience a little bit more because there's not as many of them.
Yeah, I've read that article too, Jacqueline, and I think it's fantastic. In the past, companies have not paid super close attention to micro-influencers, but I've definitely noticed over the last year and a half, they have a specialized focus on specifically partnering with micro-influencers because they're more specialized, right? They have a specific niche and usually a more engaged audience than macro-influencers.
Definitely. And so that kind of brings us to this opinionated controversy of how much really is micro-influencers? How many followers is that? The article specifically stated that less than 10,000 followers was their definition of a micro-influencer. However, I've read a lot of different sources, and I think for me, and when I look at influencers as a marketer, I usually look at somewhere around 10,000 to about 50 or even 100,000 followers as my micro influencer. What do you think, Jess?
I would agree with that statement. I think a term that's been used in recent years is a nano influencer, and that a nano influencer is one that has 10,000 followers or less. So when we're discussing this, I think we're going to use this definition of a micro influencer is anyone with that 10,000 to 100,000 mark of followers. And then if you're a nano influencer, you typically have about 10,000 followers or less than that. However, both micro and nano influencers are on the rise, and especially companies are very interested in working with both sets of influencers.
I can agree with that too. As a company, as a marketer, and as a representative for destinations, we do look at micro and nano influencers, and those are what we utilize the most.
If you are a micro and nano influencer, just expect that brands will continue to want to work with you in the upcoming years, as this is a suspected trend.
Yeah, and this even provides an opportunity for you to reach out to those destinations and to be proactive and to say, hey, I am a micro or a nano influencer, and this makes a great partnership for us.
Exactly.
Awesome. So as we kind of go into this deep dive, we again are talking about those micro and nano influencers, and as a destination, what do we look for when we look at those types of influencers and we research and vet them? So before we go too in depth with our deep dive today, Jess, I want to ask you a question. As an influencer yourself, do you find that companies and marketers find you on Instagram the most, or are they referral or word of mouth?
Oh gosh, can I say all of the above?
Of course.
Honestly, I think it is a good mixture. So I will say, depending on the company, right? If it's a small local company, I do find that they do find me on Instagram, whether they're looking for location tags or using hashtag searches. That's one way that they found me. However, larger companies and destinations, I feel like they found me a variety of ways, whether that be on a specific influencer platform where influencers and brands partner together, or Trav Media, which is a site that influencers and destinations can link up on. And then I feel like too, once an influencer, including myself, works with a destination, Whether it be like an agency, for example, like Relic, who manages multiple destinations, we kind of get passed around to destination that way, or word of mouth, right? Obviously, the destinations have relationships with each other, and they have conferences and meetings and whatnot, and sometimes our information is passed if we did a good job in their destination and they appreciated what we did for them.
I love that. And that's definitely true for me. And you hit it right on the head. As a marketer for an agency who helps multiple destinations, that is one of the first things that I do when I look at influencers is look at our connections and our current partnerships that we've done in the past or people that we have found but maybe weren't the right fit. I revisit each and every one of them and ask myself, you know, are they now a good partner? Are they now a good fit? You know, if they went to Garfield County last year, are they a good fit for San Juan County this year? So that's definitely the first step I take.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting too, for example, you work for an agency that handles multiple destinations, and each destination can be similar in some aspects, but different in other aspects, whether that be the audience or the current campaign that they're targeting or running. So I love what you said about maybe it wasn't that specific influencer wasn't a good fit in the last destination or for the last campaign, but they now are a good fit for this specific one. So I guess my advice for influencers that are listening is that even though maybe you can't partner with a specific destination because they're not interested in the audience type that you have or the specific campaign that you would like to highlight, it doesn't mean that another destination won't be interested in what you have to offer.
Definitely. So you mentioned fit, and that has been something that we've kind of touched on in our last couple of questions and comments. So Jess, what kind of questions does a destination ask you to see if this collaboration would be a good fit?
That's a fantastic question. And first off, destinations should be asking influencers questions. Don't just blindly go into a partnership with an influencer. You want to find out more from them. So for example, in the past, typically, my destinations will ask me about three main things. First off, they want to know my audience demographics. They want to know who's following me, right? Whether that be my blog audience or that social media audience. They want to know the gender, age, where they're located, all of those stats. Another thing that they will always ask me is my reach for my social media and my blog. Of how many people are engaging with my content, how many people are reading my articles on a monthly basis, etc. And then the third thing that they will typically ask me is what content typically performs well on my site. I think this is a fantastic question that destinations should be asking influencers. Influencers can have a variety of different material or articles on their website or on their social media platforms that destinations should figure out what really is performing best and if that's a good fit for their specific destination. So those are the three things I typically see destinations asking me before we start a partnership together.
Those are such good questions. I'll be honest, I definitely ask one and two the most, but I don't know if I've asked number three as much. That's probably something I need to do a little bit more.
Honestly, for the first couple of years when I was doing this, I never got asked that. But just recently, I felt like a couple destinations have started asking me that question, and I thought it was pretty insightful.
Yeah. And all of these things, I'll put a little plug in here because as a marketer, we contact so many influencers all the time. And the first question I usually ask in order to get answers to those questions is, do you have a media kit that we can view? And I'm actually surprised at a lot of influencers who do not have one. And so I thought I'd just plug that in there. That is definitely something that pleases us or that makes influencers look very professional or very proactive with their work and helps us to get the information that we need to make those kind of decisions. It also is a great marketing piece for destinations because as an agency, we can use that or pass that along to our clients to summarize the influencer's profile and information in a very digestible way for them.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. If you are an influencer listening and you do not have a media kit, you need to create a media kit today. That is the number one thing that you should have available to hand over to a destination or a brand that will partner with you. There's so many resources online, and maybe we can even talk more in depth about a media kit in a future episode. But definitely, if you don't have one, get started on one. And if you have one, continually update it so it is up to date for those destinations.
It's also the perfect opportunity to reach back out to destinations who you already have contact with. I know we recently just received an email from an influencer that said, hey, I've updated my media kit for 2021, so here it is. And that was really nice to see as well.
That's a fantastic idea. I've not done that before, of reach back out once I update a media kit. So I'm definitely going to log that away for later use, because I think that's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, we'll definitely have an episode on that in the future, so stay tuned. So Jess, I think the last question that I have for you today, as far as the influencer side of research, is what do you hope that destinations look at, or maybe don't want them to look at, when they're researching and vetting you?
That is a fantastic question. I will answer the first part first. The things that I hope that they are looking at is the quality content that I produce, whether that be through photos, videos, or articles. I hope that they see the time that I put into each piece that I make and the captions that I write and the research that I do. So that's the number one thing. I also hope that they take a look at specifically my articles that I write. That's where I have a lot of sway and influence, is through my blog. And so I put a lot of time and effort into those articles and guides that I create. And then the last thing that I hope that they check is my engagement levels on my social channels, whether that be through sharing or commenting or liking my stuff. Those are things that I hope destinations do actually look at when they are researching and vetting me as a potential partner. Your second question, what do I hope they don't look at? That is a fantastic question. And honestly, I hope that they don't just look at my follower count. So currently today, I'm sitting close to, 15,000. And compared to a lot of other travel influencers, that number is quite small when you're looking at macro influencers that are travel influencers. So I hope that destinations don't have such a shallow focus of just looking at that vanity metric of how many followers do you have, instead of looking at the whole picture of how much influence does this actual individual have. So I hope that answers your question, Jacqueline.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I think this is one area that my position is pretty unique for, because we do a lot of public relations in our department as well as content. And I think putting influencer marketing in that bucket and then in that category is really unique, because when I look at that follower count, I do exactly what you would want us to do. I don't look at that in and of itself, but I say, okay, this is the number of followers they have. Does their engagement rate and their activity match that? Does the ratio come out to be something that we would hope it would be?
That's fantastic. Well, you are a fantastic marketer for doing that. So
well, thank you.
Yes, of course. Of course. Okay, Jacqueline, you've asked me a couple of fantastic questions. I want to kind of turn the tables on you now and ask you a few questions that I've had come up in my mind. So the first one is, on the last episode that we filmed, we briefly touched on niche and reach. What is more important to you as a marketer?
Oh, Jess, this is the common struggle that we deal with when we're talking with clients about what kind of an influencer they want and what their goals are. So yes, definitely listen to the last episode if you haven't already. I would have to say that we go with niche almost 100% of the time, only because Relic does specialize in destination marketing and in tourism, and travel influencers are our main goal when we go to hire an influencer to travel somewhere. Very rarely are we looking at the fashion or the products or other types of things that influencers would highlight on their feed. We want them to travel to the destination. We want them to experience it. And so that niche is definitely our main focus.
I think that's fantastic to know, especially as an influencer, that niche is important for marketers that are looking at us. I think sometimes as an influencer, and I know others feel the same way, we kind of feel pressured to accommodate to a lot of different niches just because we're trying to attract a bigger audience, and we feel pressured to do that. However, I think it's important to realize as an influencer, you actually do the opposite when you become, right, trying to become that macro influencer, right, that has a ton of followers, but not a specific niche. You kind of do lose out on some partnerships that brands are looking at you for. So if you are a micro or a nano influencer that has just one specific niche and you're worried that, you know, it's not enough, let me just first say it is enough. I do think it's important to have a specific niche in order to be found and in order to be effective for brands to partner with.
Yeah, and I can even take it one step further. Because we are so niche with that travel industry segment, sometimes we'll actually even niche down our influencers one more level by looking at some of their possible certifications. Are they scuba certified? Or do they have canyoneering experience? You know, are they a mountain biker? Do they have that experience or even their own bike possibly that they can bring with them? And we look at some of those because our destinations are so rural or have some of these high adventure capabilities that we would like to highlight as well. So if you think that travel is a niche, think even deeper. What are some of those specialties that you can highlight that destinations can take advantage of?
Fantastic point. It's not enough just to call yourself a travel influencer these days. You have to niche down. You have to find a specific type of travel or a specific place, or, you know, whether that be family or couple travel, you need to niche down because that will definitely help the opportunities that are available to you with brands looking for those specific type of influencers.
Definitely.
We talked last week about goals. Do you pick your influencers based on those goals before you share them with your influencers?
Ooh, that is a good question. A lot of the times our destinations sometimes don't quite know what they're looking for, but they do depend on our expertise as an agency to help them develop those goals. So a lot of the times we actually do develop the goals as we search them on Instagram or with their websites and things like that. So yes, a lot of times we know those goals and we're basing the influencer's feed or their website content based on those goals. Very rarely, I think, do we actually share our goals with the influencer until we get to a close partnership stage after we receive a media kit and we're looking at some itinerary type opportunities. And then we share, you know, this is where we'd like you to go. This is what we're trying to highlight for the trip. We definitely should and could be sharing that a little bit earlier as well to give them more insight, but that's what's worked for us so far.
Yeah, no, and I don't think there is a wrong way to do this, whether you're sharing your goals right off the bat or whether you're kind of vetting and researching the influencer and getting to know them first. And then once you're at that stage of forming a partnership, then sharing your goals. I think either works. It would be kind of fun to A/B test it, right? Just to see how effective both is. As an influencer, I do think it is helpful. Because honestly, I've had destinations do both in the past where they reach out to me and say, okay, this is the campaign that we're running this month. Are you a good fit? And then I can say yes and no. And then if it's a yes, I can provide feedback and information that does stay, yeah, this would be a good fit. However, I also have had the reverse happen as well. We get close to a partnership and then actually forming a partnership, then they let me know their goals, which hasn't been bad at all either. So honestly, I think if you're an agency or your destination, I don't think there is a wrong way to go on the timing of sharing your goals with the influencers.
Yeah, I think it also depends on your end goal as well. Obviously, as an agency, our end goal is to create a partnership with the influencer, no matter who they are or what their fit or what their expertise is. Because we have so many destinations that we're looking for, usually all at the same time, with one specific client in mind for the present, right? So if you're a destination and you're just one destination looking for an influencer, I think that upfront approach of sending the campaign goals and saying, this is what we're doing, are you a good fit, is actually a very efficient way to do it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree. Thank you so much for answering all of my questions. I think this has been very beneficial for both the destination and the influencer as we've chatted about researching and vetting influencers for upcoming campaigns for destinations. We are so excited to continue talking about all things influencer marketing. So to join the conversation outside of this podcast, follow Influencer Marketing for Destinations on Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. We are there to answer your questions, share insights, and stay up to date with the latest content.
And we've got an awesome guest planned for our next episode, which will talk even more about vetting and researching influencers. See you next time. Thanks for listening. This has been another episode of Influencer Marketing for Destinations, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Jess and Jacqueline and produced by Relic.